The following sermon was recorded at Pipe Creek Community Church in Pipe Creek, Texas. For more information, visit our website at pipecreekcc.com. May God bless you as you study His Word.
It all started on the Friday after Thanksgiving in the year 2020 at the men's Friday morning Bible study, when we began to study a new book. That new book, the men will remember, was called The Mortification of Sin. It was 130 pages long, and the book was very small, a pocket-sized book. It took us 13 months to get through it, which we took our time and studied it deeply. It covered a lot of scriptures. But it told us that we are all full of sin, completely full of sin. And no matter how hard you try to eliminate that sin from your life, you're always going to have sin in your life until the day that you die. Sin is like weeds. You can keep pulling them and pulling them out, but there's always more and more to come back up. It will always be there. He ended it by saying this book was written by a man named John Owen, who was a Puritan in the 1600s. He was a teacher, and he was a pastor at a church. He was a theologian also. At the end, he said, "I don't care how hard you try, how much you depend upon the Holy Spirit, you might be able to overcome, you might be able to push down, improve your righteous life, as you call it, to some degree, but you're going to continue to sin." I used to tell Corey, "You don't ever have to sin again." He's now convinced of that, but he's going to sin again. And so am I, and so are you. It's going to happen. This book impacted a number of us as we looked at our own lives. And I looked at my own life and I realized that I was not nearly as righteous and holy as maybe I thought that I was. That I had tried all my life to suppress sin, to control it, to stamp it out, to subdue it somehow, to conquer it. But I was never able to. But now I realized that there was a lot that I had not even tried to conquer. That I was not nearly as great as I thought that I was. That's what this book taught me. And as I began to look at my life and the life of people around me in that Bible study and in this group here and people in my family, those that I interface with day to day, I realized that sin in this world comes from three different sources. And so our title today is The Great Sin. Of all the sins, there is one that Jesus says and that the Bible says is the greatest. I'm not talking about the rejection of Christ. Certainly that is the greatest. But as we walk our lives as Christians, as we live our lives and do our lives, this one sin seems to always be there. And so the verse that we're going to look at this morning defines those three sins. 1 John 2:16. "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh," that's sin number one, "the lust of the eyes," sin number two, "and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world." Those are the three places where sin originates in our lives. And so the great sin, the sin that controls all of us to some degree, some more, some less, is the sin of pride. Pride. We're all proud. We're all proud, every one of us here this morning. Roger Miller Maybe you've heard of Roger Miller. He wrote a song in 1966, and the title was, "It's My Belief That Pride Is the Chief Cause in the Decline in the Number of Husbands and Wives." It's a secular song. I guess it was on the country and western charts for a while. But that, first of all, that statement, "I believe that pride is the chief cause in the decline in the number of husbands and wives." I mean, Sally Larkey and I, we love to study grammar and correct each other's writings. That sentence by itself has got seven nouns, one verb, is, a couple of adjectives, and one conjunction. But you know what? The word that stands out to me is the word pride. Pride is the cause of destruction of this marriage that that Roger Miller was writing. He was writing about a couple that he knew whose marriage was falling apart. And it was falling apart because the people in that marriage were very proud people. And they couldn't get along because one was trying to be prouder than the other. And so it just didn't work. And so pride is the one sin that every person has, that no one is free of, that everyone hates to see in others, and which hardly any person would even admit that he has. I don't know of any Christian that I've ever talked to that has said, "Well, I'm a prideful person." The fact is, I haven't heard any non-Christian say, "I'm a prideful person." But yet that is the sin that we're talking about. That's the sin that Christ says is the worst. Nebuchadnezzar, and that's why we read this verse, was a very prideful man when he said, "Is not Babylon, this great city, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power, and for the glory of my majesty?" This statement goes back to the 600s BC. That's how long pride has been around. So it's around today. We are all prideful. Pride is a sin. The opposite of pride is humility. The very utmost evil in us is pride. Not immorality or lust or getting drunk or anger or lying. It's pride. Pride was the sin that made the devil the devil. Pride was the sin of Adam and Eve. Both of them wanted to be like God. They were not satisfied with where they were. They wanted to be like God himself, and that led them to every other sin. In the Christian tradition, there are what they call the seven deadly sins. Maybe you've heard of that. I looked it up and found out that those seven deadly sins come from Proverbs 6:16. It says that God hates these seven, six sins. Actually, he hates seven, it says. The number one sin was pride. Then there was greed. Then there was wrath. And then there was envy. Then there's lust and gluttony and sloth. Pride was the chief of those sins. And then in this study that we had, I recognized that I too, like Nebuchadnezzar, like Adam and Eve, like all of you, as a prideful man. Well, I tried hard to hide it. We don't want anybody to know that we're proud. We are proud. We don't want people to see that. I tried, did a pretty good job, I thought. I mean, people tell me that you're too proud. One of them's my wife. Anyway, pride just creeps in to the heart when we are chasing after recognition instead of making a difference in our life for Christ and for his kingdom. It can go unnoticed by a lot of people, but you know inside and that you are secretly chasing after it to make a name for yourself instead of making an impact for Christ. And that's what it comes down to, for making an impact for the glory of God. God never called us to make a name for ourselves. He never wanted us to exalt ourselves or elevate ourselves. He never wanted us to be famous or consider ourselves great. And so the goal of a Christian is to make Jesus great and honorable. And when we don't do that, then pride just kind of creeps into our lives and into our hearts, and we elevate our own name instead of His name. So I said I tried to hide it. Well, how do you hide sin of pride in your life? We do it, every one of you, and there's not a person in this room that doesn't do this. We do it by living three different lives. The first life that we live, every one of us, is what we call a public life. Today you are on display to everybody in here. This is a public gathering. Every person in here can see every other person and compare yourself to every other person in here. We put on smiles as though our life is happy and great, when in fact it may be miserable. Your marriage may be falling apart. There's some in here who are very sick. There's some in here that are very poor. But we don't show that. We show, so glad to see you. How are you doing? I'm just doing great. Hardly anybody says, I'm doing horrible. I've got this problem. We don't want to hear that. And even when we'd come dressed up, most of us, most of the time, we present ourselves, our hair is combed, we've taken a shower, bath, our shoes are shined, and we strut around for everyone to see. When it comes time for prayer, we bow our heads in respect to the Lord. And the moment that our head is ducked and our eyes are closed, some of us think about what's going to happen next in my day when I get out of church. What am I going to be doing? What are we going to eat today? What am I going to have for lunch? Who knows what goes through your mind? But things go through your mind. But you're presenting yourself as a holy and righteous person. We got our Sunday go to meeting clothes on with this big smile on our face. Everything that we do in our public life is to make ourselves look good. I don't know of anything that any of us does that we would throw out that makes ourselves look anything but good. And so we walk away, we compare ourselves, the dress we have on, we just compare ourselves, and we often end up feeling worse about ourselves than we should have, or better about ourselves than we should. We easily get put down or puffed up by the comparison game. And a good example, when you have your picture taken, somebody puts a camera at you, and what do they say? What's the one word they always say? Smile. Well, why do they have to tell you to smile? Because if you look around, really nobody's smiling. That's not your natural complexion. I mean, not complexion, but your face, it doesn't typically smile. But we want to look like we're happy and smiley and everything's great. And so when I say smile, everybody says smile. And we look at the picture, no, take another one. We have to present ourselves so well. And so I say that every one of us does this. We put our best foot forward and we present ourselves in the best possible way. That is pride. How do I know? Because of the second life that we live. Not the public life, but the private life. When you leave here and you get in your car, to go home. You take your nice clothes off, get into your run around the house shorts or whatever it is, maybe your pajamas. You might be irritable. You might get a little selfish. You might get a little lazy. You might be depressed. And as the week goes on, you might not shave. You might get a little smelly. You might be impolite to your spouse or your children. Am I talking to you, or am I? This is me I'm talking about. But I think it's, we all live this private life. It's a life that we don't demonstrate in the public. It's how we act at home. When we're around just our family, where nobody else can see. In fact, here's how we change. You're at home and somebody calls, I want to come over and visit for a while. Are you home? Sure, come on over. And you run real quickly and you get the dishes out of the off the breakfast table, and you make the bed, and I run outside and I blow the leaves off the entranceway. I might even mow the yard. I might even wash my car just because you're coming. Because I don't want you to see the life that I live every day. I want you to see the life that you think I live, which is a lot higher, greater, more beautiful, more perfect, more godly life. We all fit that mold. We all do that. We don't want people to see that private life. But every one of us does it. We put our best foot forward and we present ourselves in the best possible way. That's pride. Well, the third life that we live, this is the one that where it gets really personal, is what I call secret life. Not even your children, not even your wife or husband, your friends know anything about your secret life. That's the one that's in your mind. That's the one that when you lay down at night, the things that you think about, when you sit down and nobody's around you, the thoughts that go through your mind, whether they're good or evil, the schemes that you plan, our innermost desires come out, the things that we lust over come out. These are the things that I'm not going to share with you, and I don't think you're going to share with me. Your secret life is just not going to come out. And so that's pride at its finest. When I look at the list of sins in the Bible, often they're sins of the mind. I found some of them. Anger, conceit, coveting, deceit, desiring the praise of men, envy, fear, jealousy, being judgmental, lusting, unbelief, unforgiveness. These are sins that you don't demonstrate, sort of like murder or kidnapping or stealing or lying. Those are the things that people see. So these are the things that are within your, these are the secret, that's the secret you. And there's a secret me also. Yeah, we have a secret life, every one of us. You don't know what goes through my mind. Nobody does. Nobody does except me and God. God knows. Nobody else knows. You know what I'm talking about. I think of King David when he was on the rooftop. He should have been out fighting wars, as all the kings did at that time, but instead he was idle by himself, and his mind was wandering, and he wandered over the wall, and he saw a naked lady. And his mind, his secret life began to come out, and it took control. Then it became not only his secret, but it became his private, because we know what he did next. And then it became public, because we know what happened to him after that. And so we all have these three lives that we live: public, private, and secret. Does all this sound a little bit exaggerated to you? It was exaggerated in my life after we read that book. I realized that's the life, that's me. That's the life that I live, the lives that I live. The more pride that you have, the more you dislike it in others. If you want to find out how proud you are, just ask yourself, how much do I dislike it when people snub me or refuse to notice me? When you're snubbed, when people have a little huddle over here talking and they're not including you, well, I'd like to be a part of that group. Look at me, I'm important too. Somebody else is getting the attention that you wanted, and you get annoyed with that person. That annoys you very much. It's very competitive, pride is. It's no pleasure. There's no pleasure in just having something, only out of having more of it than the next man does. Let's use, for example, that you're a working man and your salary is $30,000 a year, and your neighbor's making $25,000. You're happy. Well, then he gets a raise and he's now making $35,000. Well, you don't like that because he's making more than you. And that's when pride comes in. I won't think of myself as, if I think of myself as being smart and rich and even good looking, I really am not, unless compared to the other person. I mean, I may be richer, smarter, better looking than the next person, but then the one who comes along that's richer, smarter, better looking than me, that's where the trouble starts. That's where pride comes in. It's a pleasure that you look for in pride that you're not going to have there. Here's another test. If your religious life, your godly walk, makes you feel like you're good and better than others, then it's probably the devil that's leading you. It's not God. Because in God's presence, we forget that we really are wretched and dirty. But God doesn't see us that way. We really are dirty, and we are wretched and full of sin and evil and lead this kind of a life. And so this pride comes, as I mentioned before, it comes from the devil, straight from him. It's a spiritual sin. It's a deadly sin. It eats us up and eats up our ability to love others. Because if you have more than I have, then I don't want to befriend you. But if I have more than you, come on, friend, let's be friends. It's okay. Pride's okay if you're patting a child on the back and saying, great work you did in school today. It's okay if you put a bumper sticker on the back of your car that says, my child is an honor student at Bandera Elementary School, as long as you're doing it for the right reason. If it's bringing pleasure to your child, then that's good. If it's bringing pleasure to you because you're living out this child's life, then it's sin. I have a sticker on my pickup that says, I'm a Century Club member of the former Aggies. And Carol said, well, now doesn't that sort of imply that you're bragging, that you actually donate to Texas A&M? Well, she's right. It does. Why is that sticker on my back window of my pickup? A&M knows I give them a little bit of money, but do I have to advertise it? It's a sin. It's pride. It's exactly what it is. And so some use of the word pride is okay. You can be proud of your son who got a promotion because it brings pleasure to you for him that he got this promotion. I mean, even Paul said to the church at Corinth, he said, I have the highest confidence in you and I take great pride in you. You have greatly encouraged me and made me happy despite all my troubles. There's Paul talking about pride. He was proud of the Corinthian church. Years ago, I went to a conference. It was an ACSI conference for ACSI, Association of Christian Schools International. And the president of that organization, I think there's like 9,000 Christian schools that belong to it. Our little school belonged to it. And I went to that conference. There were probably 1,000 people there. And the president was speaking. And he got up and he said, I just got off of a plane from Vienna, Austria. And I was in first class, on the first class seat, and this man next to me asked me if that was a Bible that I had in my hands. Well, when he made that statement, I immediately went south. This issue he should have been telling us about the man's asking the question about the Bible in his hand. But no, he had to say, I just flew in from Vienna and I'm in first class. Look how important I am. Look at me. And so we do that. We preface our statements and our lives with things that make us bigger, better, more proud than we really are. In the bulletin today, Barry did a great job in producing it. If you look at the title on the front page, it's Pride, P-R-I-D-E. And right in the center is the big I. It's about I. It's about me. My daughter, sitting in the back, was in high school at Marshall High School in San Antonio. And Carol said, you need to pick her up at school today. Marshall High School was a big school, 5A or whatever it is now. And I said, well, what is she wearing? Because there's a lot of kids there. Well, she'll have on blue jeans and a white top. So I parked across the street, and when the school was out, there were 900 girls that came out of that building, and all of them had on blue jeans and white tops. But not a one of them was dressed alike. They were all different. Don't ask me the differences, but you know, then the brand Jordache was the brand to wear. And then there was, what's the next one? I don't know what it was. Kiss me or something. Kick me. Anyway, you had to have on the latest style. You had to compare yourself with everyone else. You didn't want to be exactly like them. You want to be a little better, a little different. And so these are the lives that we live. I would say in summary that the sin of pride, I wrote this down, is a heart attitude. It's about the heart that is expressed in an unhealthy, exaggerated attention to self and an elevated view of one's abilities, one's accomplishments, one's position, one's possessions. It's always been called the cancer of the soul. Pride has always been called the beginning of all sin. And sin is in its final form. Pride, in its final form, is the direct opposite of humility. And that's a trait. Humility is a trait that is greatly praised by God. I guess the most humble person that you can think of was Jesus. He was so humble that on the night in which he was crucified, he met in the upper room with his 12 disciples, and he washed their feet. Now, that's as low as you can get. That's being humble. Not only that, but he washed the feet of the man that was about to betray him. Jesus never put himself above. He never claimed to have more. He never talked about how good he was, that he was better than anyone else. What he did say is, I honor my God, my Father. I do exactly what he tells me to do, no more, no less. And everything that I do is for his honor. You know, he calls us the same way. Whatever we do, however we dress, wherever we go, whatever we read or look at or say should always be for his honor. King Solomon, in one of his proverbs, said that pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before the fall. Pride has caused the ruin of many individuals. It's caused the destruction of many nations. In the Minor Prophets, we have read about the destruction of Nineveh. Why was Nineveh destroyed? Because they were so proud. They were the largest capital city in the world, had 8 miles of wall around them, 100 feet high and wide enough for 3 chariots to go side by side. And they said, I am so great that I don't worry about anyone else. God said, you may think you're great. But in the year 612, when God brought a great rainstorm, and the rainstorm washed the walls down that were over the river, the enemy came in and literally destroyed them, utterly destroyed them. Barry, while he was in the army, saw Nineveh. It's in Iraq. And he said, you can't even tell that there was ever a city there. There are some, I will call them mounds, piles of what used to be old walls, totally destroyed. Babylon was the one that destroyed Nineveh. Guess what happened to Babylon? Babylon, the great city that I built for my glory, God destroyed it. Today, Babylon, you can find it on the map, but there's nobody that lives there. God said, I'm going to wipe you off the face. No one will reside there again. And so they forgot God, and they became proud. They didn't know God. I don't want us to forget God. I don't want us to say, well, look at me. Look how great I am. Look what I've accomplished. Look at all that I have. Because you're putting yourself above God when you do that. And so if you want to be humble, you first have to realize that you're proud. And if you realize that you're proud, then you can let the Lord take care of it. And he will. He will do that. He will lower you down to the position where you realize that you need him, that you are not a person who can stand alone.